Blog Talk Radio.
You're tuned in. You are listening to Taylor Terror Radio, taylorterrorradio.com. We are live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 1 p.m. Eastern time, right here. If you missed any of the show today, or you want to go back and listen to the show, or you want to distribute the show to your friends and say, hey, check out this really cool podcast with this guy and this girl, and they're awesome, and well, direct them right here to taylorterrorradio.com, and or you can go to any of your favorite podcast listening platforms, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Spreaker, Google Play Music, or simply go to Google or your favorite search engine and type in Taylor Terror Radio, and it will pull up a list of different podcast listening platforms that we are on. All right, here is the vitals. The phone number, 323-870-3499 is the number if you like to call. I doubt we'll take phone calls today, but you never know. That's kind of a Friday thing, and we've gotten lucky a few times, and we're really not going to push our luck. The chat room here on Blog Talk Radio is open. You can sign in as a guest, or you can create a free Blog Talk Radio account, which gives you, by the way, a free 30-minute podcast once a week, no strings attached. Good people at BTR, Blog Talk Radio. And if you like to follow us on Twitter, you can follow me, Jason, on Twitter at JWadeTaylor. You can follow my co-host and my friend, my very good friend on Twitter, Tara Dublin, at Tara Dublin Rocks. And we encourage everyone to follow the show account on Twitter, Taylor Tara Radio. You can direct your questions, your comments there. Bitches, gripes, whatever you feel is necessary to get your point across. We have a very special guest on our show today coming up at the bottom of the hour. She's challenging Susan Collins in Maine for that Senate seat there. And that Dr. Kathleen London is going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour. That's 1:30 Eastern time. So a lot going on, a lot to talk about. Tara, how are you this morning? Good morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning.
Morning. Good morning.
I could not be more thrilled this morning. Full of coffee, and I had a nice slice of Schadenfreude for breakfast this morning, along with my coffee, watching Michael Cohen getting sentenced to 3 years in prison. Bye-bye, and just watch the chips all fall. Flynn's going to go. Flynn doesn't want any prison time, right? He's been asking for no prison time. Flynn's going to get prison time. Manafort's going to get a longer sentence. It's all coming together. We're witnessing the beginning of the end here, is what I believe, because with Donald Trump's personal lawyer being sentenced today and implicating him in all of his crimes, how much longer can this go on, Jason? How much longer?
Yeah. Doesn't seem like very much longer. Let me give a side note here for everybody on the Michael Cohen sentencing. If you're curious, I know these things. In particular, I know these things because I was married. My ex-wife is a oncologist. She is a doctor. Her dad was the warden at a huge federal prison. But just to tell you how much people have asked me, how much time will Michael Cohen actually serve of that 3 years federal time? You have to serve at least 75% before you're eligible for parole. At least.
He's going away.
So he'll be away for at least 2 years. At least, right? 75% of the
time. So what was interesting listening to, you know, before the sentencing happened this morning, the memo was so what was interesting is the Mueller sentencing memo recommended almost no jail time because he was just so cooperative. But as the judge today said, your cooperation does not give you a clean slate. And the Southern District of New York was basically telling him to bend over and grab his ankles. It doesn't matter how cooperative you are if you willingly committed and knowingly committed crimes. And I don't care if it was your blind loyalty to Donald Trump. Nobody put a gun to your head, Michael Cohen. You were there because you wanted to be, and you enjoyed the lifestyle, and you loved the notoriety of being Donald Trump's personal lawyer. You had no other clients. You had no other interests outside of serving that man. So you reap what you sow. Karma is real, and it came back to bite you today, Michael Cohen. Bye-bye. He goes and he has to present himself. He has to surrender himself by March 6th. That's when his sentence begins. And they haven't decided where he's going exactly. While I'd love to see him in Rikers, he's going to go to, you know, like a Martha Stewart white-collar camp for rich people. Of course, if a black man did what Michael Cohen did, he'd be in Rikers. But, you know, let's not even go there. He'll be away minimum two and a half years.
He's going to be in celebrity surroundings. That's what they call it in the federal. I know my ex-father-in-law was a warden at federal penitentiary. He's going to be in celebrity. They call it, quote unquote, celebrity surroundings. And that's it. That don't matter if you're like a celebrity or not, or you are involved in some sort of high profile, crime. Whatever, but yeah, he's not going to Rikers. He's going to federal penitentiary anyways. I don't think Rikers is state. That's not federal.
Well, that's the great thing is that because he's guilty in the state of New York, he could be sentenced to Rikers, but he won't.
Okay. You're right. I forgot about that. Yeah, he absolutely could.
So
yes, he could go there theoretically.
Was he sentenced, right. And he also was hit with a $50,000 fine for lying to Congress. So, which is separate from what he was charged with and sentenced for. So, yeah, I mean, technically, so if it was just the Southern District of New York sentencing him, if it was nothing to do with the Mueller investigation, the Southern District of New York could absolutely put him in Rikers. But he won't. I mean, Rikers is it's basically a zoo for humans. It's awful. It's literally the worst prison. Instead, what I heard before I muted MSNBC before we came on the air, the place that they're suggested that his lawyers are suggesting is one of those, like I said, the Martha Stewart privilege camp. It's in a town called Otisville, New York. Otisville, is a running joke from the movie Superman in 1978 because Otis is Lex Luthor's sidekick, and I always call Chris Christie Otis because he reminds me of Ned Beatty in the 1978 Superman movie. And I always joked that the reason Chris Christie stayed around Donald Trump is because Donald Trump would promise him his own Otisville. So now Michael Cohen is literally going to go to Otisville. All of it just makes me laugh.
Let me do this, Karen. Karen.
Whoa, Karen. Paging
Karen
Dr.
is
Freud,
my
everyone.
Karen is my fiance.
Karen is his lady.
Whoa.
I'm not his lady.
Oh.
Ooh, where is your brain today?
I'm going to have to play her that clip back. She's going to be like, what?
What?
No. Shit, now I forgot what I was going to
say. Was it about Michael Cohen?
Yeah, of course it was.
Then I'm sure you have a valid point to make.
Let me unofficially speak on behalf of Michael Cohen and his posse.
Michael Cohen has a posse?
Well, I will pretend that he does. And look, our boy Cohen, he made the smart play here, because Cohen's got a wife and kids, and he's got the rest of his life. Even if he serves the full 3 years, that's nothing. I mean, you can, as they say it, when you're doing time in the penitentiary, he can do that standing on his head. 3 years in the grand scheme of things for Michael Cohen, he better be down on his knees thinking that, you know, he's Catholic. He better be down on his knees thinking the Blessed Mother that he only got 3 years and that he gets to spend the rest of his life out of prison with his family and kids, and not like Manafort, who's probably going to die in prison.
It's awesome to think. And it's also awesome to look at the words of Adam Schiff, who says that the second Donald Trump leaves office, he will most likely get arrested. I saw something yesterday and shared it that from a guy, I forget what the source was. I think it may have been The Guardian, but that Donald Trump very likely could also die in prison, which would be delightful. Because, again, I don't wish any ill will on Donald Trump other than a prison sentence. I want him to be healthy and in, in the best physical form to be taken to prison, because an instant death or a heart attack, it's too good for him. You know, there needs to be some suffering that goes on, and that would include public humiliation and the remainder of his miserable life with zero freedom and no Twitter. So that, take away everything that he lives for. Take away his Diet Cokes and his Big Macs and his Twitter and put him away. That would make me so very happy. And I don't see how, because people are still like, 2 more years of Donald Trump. It's like, how? He has been implicated in more than one felony. Come on, let's go.
Yeah. If anybody has a chance, you should go over and read from he dropped it late last night, Frank Bruni's piece over in the New York Times. It's I don't know if you had it. I think I dropped it in one of our groups or something, Tara. Maybe not. It's called the title of the piece is "The Most Powerful Reject in the World." is there anyone who wants to hang with Donald Trump? Listen, this is not what you think it is. This is a very powerful piece, and Frank, straightforward. This man has, he doesn't have any, I mean, this guy, and you won't come, I thought, I'm going to read this piece, and Frank's going to lay it out, and I'm going to kind of feel sorry for this dude. No, you won't. The way Frank lays this out, this man, he made this bid, and he's got a lie in it, and he is. He doesn't have anybody. Nobody wants to be around him. He can't even get a damn chief of staff. One of the most prized positions. I mean, you have a limited access to the president of the United States. You want to talk about furthering a career? That's how.
But he has over 10 people who want the job, Jason. Don't you know that? He has over 10. This is a new number.
I listed some possible names that could,
who really wants it, actually. Mark Meadows seems to really, really want it, because Mark Meadows is like the biggest traitor. He's awful. So Mark Meadows actively campaigning, I think. He said it would be a great honor to be Donald Trump's chief of staff.
Why doesn't he just put Ivanka there? That's what I said.
Oh, God, that would be awful. She's under investigation also by the Southern District of New York.
Just saying, you could go with Ivanka, Sean Hannity, Stephen Miller, or Kellyanne. Or if you really want to get a whack
Lewandowski.
Job. Corey Lewandowski, why not? If you really want to go with a whack job, how about Scotty Nell Hughes?
Ugh. Jeez, keep going. Katrina Pearson, Tommy Lauren. Ew,
there you go.
Ew, ew.
But yeah, Tony.
All of it's awful.
Yes, Tony Lauren.
Yeah, yeah, she'd be great. So if nobody respectable wants this job and someone like a Mark Meadows is actively campaigning for it, so Mark Meadows is compromised. Lindsey Graham is still compromised. He's still yesterday tweeting that Donald Trump was the stronger one in that meeting with Chuck and Nancy. Oh, we have to talk about the Chuck and Nancy meeting.
Oh,
oh my
I've
goodness.
Got it. That's like number – yeah, that was like – I've got Cohen 1, 2, the clash in the Oval Office is number 2 on my memo list.
Yesterday was the – oh, man. So yesterday was the day that Nancy Pelosi became president is what a lot of people were saying because she was the only adult in that room. She really was. Because there's Chuck Schumer, and, you know, you look at the video, and the body language tells you if you heard zero audio and you knew nothing except you looked at a photograph of the four of them, what I would take away, what a general casual observer, if a picture is worth a thousand words, you had Nancy Pelosi sitting upright, in control, fully in her power, with some awesome shoes. Just she wore her high heels to stand up to that man yesterday. So you had Nancy fully in her power. You had Mike Pence completely mentally checked out. He was not in that room.
He was mummified.
Okay? How many pictures of him with his eyes closed? Okay, mental. I tweeted that he mentally went to the Bahamas with Mother to meet, and then everyone was like, "No, no, no, pool boy." Well, you know, Mother is the cover to get to the pool boy. But whatever. Then you have Chuck Schumer. His posture was so weak. You look at him, he's hunched over, he's looking at the floor, he's looking at his hands. And then, of course, you have King Baby with his, you know, his arms crossed and he's being belligerent. So the only adult in the Oval Office yesterday was a woman. It was Nancy Pelosi, and she, if it's not going to be, if everyone is going to continue to tell me that the election's not going to be nullified and we're not going to get the president we actually elected, then I would submit that once the Democratic House is sworn in, we can begin impeachment proceedings and Nancy Pelosi can be president. Totally and completely fine with that. And that is also a scenario that I had suggested months and months and months ago where people were like, no, that'll never happen, including you, my friend. I'm so very sorry. But you also did once say that that could never happen. And I asked you to wait to make a declarative statement like that until after we saw some sentencing, and now we have seen that. So every single day your opinion can change. You can say on a Monday, Donald Trump could never be indicted or not that should not happen. But then by Wednesday of a week in this administration, in this world that we live in, you can completely reverse that because you found out Michael Cohen just got sentenced to 3 years, and Donald Trump is completely implicated in all of that. So,
well,
the
let me
narrative
hit, let
that
me
we're
hit
all,
on a couple,
but look at the narrative we're already seeing from the other side. By the way, I've already gotten
let me
some
hit
trade
on a couple.
Because,
let me. I want to hit on a couple things here. One in particular. Look, I got to eat some crow here, and I'll do it gladly on Speaker Pelosi, soon to be Speaker Pelosi again. I've always loved, I have my differences with Nancy Pelosi in certain areas. Do I believe that we need new leadership here in 2 years? Pelosi and Schumer should step aside here in the next 2 years? Yes, I still believe that. Absolutely, I believe that.
In 2 years,
but
absolutely. I have no problem with that.
But was Nancy Pelosi the right person to be in there with Trump and the right person to be Speaker now? Yeah, I'm going to eat some crow and say absolutely she is. So
yeah.
I never hammered her. Yeah, I never hammered her or anything like that like a lot of other people did. I was just like, you know, maybe we need some new blood in there. Not necessarily a young person, but maybe somebody, you know. And, you know, I kind of saw, you know, from my own eyes yesterday when she, you know, walked in there and was in the in there with Trump and mummified Pence. And Schumer, you know, she was the adult in the room. She was controlling the conversation. She was hammering it home. And yes, when she strolled out of the White House and slid those sunglasses on, that was super freaking cool.
Like a boss. Like a fucking boss. And like she did not know what she was doing. Come on, she had that red coat on. She had her heels. he slid on those shades, and she was like, I'm now the president of the United States, more or less, because she put him
in
his
place,
and nobody does that. But nobody, and you know, I mean, if you put me in a room with Trump and let me talk to him, I could certainly put him in his place. And my favorite line that emerged from that whole thing was, they wanted to do that in private because they didn't want to have to tell Trump he didn't know what he was talking about in front of the cameras. And as far as I'm concerned, you need to tell him he doesn't know what he's talking about in front of cameras, because the American public needed to see him the way he was yesterday. They pushed back. He doesn't expect people to fight him, right? He doesn't expect people to stand up to him. And not only did she stand up to him, she got him to say out loud that he will take responsibility for the government shutdown. And she called it the
Trump
shutdown, and
he
did not like it.
That is the most ignorant man in the world.
Right?
That man is so
ignorant. And he let himself get in that situation.
So even let yourself get into that. You're exactly right.
You do not come for Nancy Pelosi. You just don't.
Oh, my God,
and then
man.
And he was like, he's saying, well, Nancy can't really say this, and Nancy can't do that. And she's like, you know, don't speak for me. You don't speak for me. And I was just like, uh-huh, tell it. She scolded him like he was a misbehaving child in her class. She owned that room. She was the only one who belonged in the Oval Office yesterday. So, I felt so, you know, I don't know her. We had her on the show. She graciously gave us 20 minutes of a very busy day that she had a little while ago before the midterms. I'm in a private room where we are all invested in supporting Nancy for speaker, and have been in that room for quite some time. The pride that I felt for Nancy Pelosi yesterday, my unwavering support, knowing that I was, you know, supporting the right person for the right reasons, that feels as good as the vindication of knowing that I was right about Trump and the Russians and Michael Cohen, all of that all along, all of that coming together in a symbiotic moment yesterday, all of the worlds colliding. The only thing that didn't happen yesterday in front of the cameras was Nancy Pelosi saying to him, and by the way, we also know that, you know, you're in cahoots with the Russians and we're going to get you. I think that's the subtext. Now that we know what we know, what I'm really enjoying is the open discussions of impeachment and indictments on MSNBC with Malcolm Nance. I don't know if you saw, but Malcolm Nance basically brought it last night and said, or the night before last, and said, you know, the election needs to be nullified. And the Supreme Court needs to nullify the election because we know what we know. And we cannot let this go on much longer. We know now.
Yeah.
I mean, you suspect, that's one thing. Now we know you have to nullify the election. But the question becomes, if you nullify the election, do we have a special election, or do we just let the real winner take over as she should have from the beginning? That's questions that need to be taken care of, I guess, obviously, after the Democratic House is sworn in. But there is no way Donald Trump lasts until 2020. I know that we said there's no way this, there's no way that, but
I'm not coming off that because for a whole lot of reasons, I'm sticking to that because I do not see Donald Trump. I see him running in 2020, if for nothing else to keep the to try to keep the power of the presidency, avoid indictment as a free man or as a civilian, whatever, however you want to label it. But
it's hard for me to believe that there are people within the Republican Party who are that hooked through the bag that they would allow this to go on. I would love to believe that there are enough people in the Republican Senate that will say, I cannot be associated with this person any longer. He is impacting my livelihood, my reputation, my political career. Someone like a Jeff Flake. We don't love Jeff Flake. Jeff Flake is a complete political opportunist. We know this. But he is also one of the few who has been vocal and will stand up and separate himself from the rest of the GOP. He'll do that.
But he's also retiring, too, though.
Yeah, but if he can talk to enough people. Are, you know,
yeah, but I mean, Flake's got presidential aspirations one day. Flake's going to want to run.
Okay,
he
fine.
Doesn't, yeah, I mean,
so
he's retiring.
That's the case,
yeah.
If that's the case, then you need to separate yourself from the pack, stand out, and make a very bold statement. If you're Jeff Flake and you want to run for president in 2020 and you want to be seen as someone with a spine and strength.
Well, he can do that now. Look, he doesn't, I mean, he didn't run for re-election.
Right.
You know, he's moving on. So he, you know, there's a number of, there's a number of senators that can do that. And I believe that as we were talking with Sherry Jacobus on Monday, I do believe, and I was talking to a group of people last night, big donors and friends of mine, friends that we get together every night and kind of trade overnight stocks, blah, blah, blah. But anyways, look, I do see a there's a lot of big donors out there that are just completely, you know, just done with Trump. I'm talking about Republican donors are completely done with Trump, that are donors to senators and you know, different representatives and what have you, and they're done. So these big donors, you know, they're putting, you know, they're going to put pressure on, you know, on these candidates they've supported, because 22 Senate seats Republicans are up in 2020, and it could be literally a bloodbath. And
it could, and especially if you're going to continue to remain loyal to this traitorous administration, and we know what we know, and your constituents know that Donald Trump helped, you know, rig the election in his favor, and he was an active participant. If your constituents know that and you have aligned yourself with it, how do you expect them to trust you and vote for you? You need to separate yourself from it, and you need to take a step back, and you need to do it now. Now is the time, because today Michael Cohen got sentenced. So today is the day where anybody who is even on the fence about dissenting from, you know, being able to put country over party, it needs to happen today. It needs to happen before Flynn and Manafort are sentenced, and they need to separate themselves from the pack now, or else they're going to be seen as complicit. And that's just the way it is now. Anybody who still aligns with Donald Trump is complicit in treason and everything that he has done. Everything. So,
Kara,
you know, I don't
Kara,
have a...
Excuse me.
Rand Paul, Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, Dana Rohrabacher, Devin Nunes, and the whole Maria Butina thing, which we haven't even touched on. Maria Butina is completely cooperating now. She knows plenty of stuff. So,
well, there's a lot more to this, because this is I know for a fact that a large group of Republicans have gotten together in D.C. and they have taken a real liking to what transpired in Wisconsin. And they're going to see what they're contemplating right now. What can they get done? What can they do in between now and the time the new Congress is sworn in? They don't have a whole lot of time. What can they do? And there are things that they can do. You know, let's see. That, I mean, you know, Trump's, you know, they're all kind of, you know, and they're also thinking over the next 2 years, well, what do we stand to gain? What do we stand to lose if we stick with Trump? You know, what can we actually get done? If we don't, you know, then we need to cut bait here. But there's a lot of that talk going around, and it's scary. It's scary to me to know that there are, you know, groups of ranking Republicans in D.C. talking about, hey, you know, we really like what they did in Wisconsin there, you know, just, you know, hamstringing the Democrats that are coming in. So why don't we try something like that on the federal law? I mean, here in D.C., you know.
I mean, come on.
I'm serious, though, Tara. I mean, would you put it past them?
You know, it bothers me so very much that anyone could look at this current situation that we're in and be like, you know, I don't see a problem. I don't see a problem with what's happening. I don't see a problem with Donald Trump remaining in office. I don't see a problem with Michael Cohen being sentenced. It has nothing to do with Donald Trump. I don't see a problem with Paul Manafort and Michael Flynn and George Papadopoulos and Rick Gates and all of the, I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem. How do you not have a problem with 16 associates of Donald Trump being contacted by the Russians, including his main adult children? How do you not have a problem with all of this? How do you continue to sit in support of him? I don't get it. I don't get it. Your career is at stake if you stay on his side. Your life and your livelihood are at stake. Let Michael Cohen be a shining example for anybody who is deciding to remain loyal to Donald Trump. You may not go to prison, but your life will be severely impacted by your association with him. This is the way it is. Everything he touches turns to shit. Everyone yep. who associates with him is tarnished for life. When this administration is done, however it ends, it doesn't end well. And your reputation goes with it. And history will not be kind to this administration or anybody who supported it from any level. So you need to think, if you are a member of the GOP, and I don't care how much money the NRA has given you, and I don't care if Maria Butina got on her knees for you, I don't care. You need to
take the NRA go
back.
Down so bad.
Okay?
I want
to
see. I want
to
see
separate
so many
yourself.
I want to see so many high-ranking NRA people behind bars. You just, I mean, I would get more joy. Oh my Lord. I would get far more joy out of that than any of these Republican politicians. Anybody, all these high-ranking NRA people that's pushed these guns on the American public.
Just wait.
She's telling all.
She is telling all. She is fully cooperating. So we're going to know
everything.
Oh, man. That's going
to
be beautiful.
Tara,
Dana Rohrabacher
go
is gone.
Yeah, Tara,
that's
we got to go to a break. We've got our guest on the line. She is holding Dr. Kathleen London is going to join us right after this quick break. Ladies and gentlemen, don't go anywhere. You are listening to Taylor Terror Radio, taylorterrorradio.com, right back after this.
I say my hell is the closet. I'm stuck inside. Can't see the light. And my heaven is a nice house in the sky. Got special heating, and I'm alright. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can't see the light. Keep it locked up inside. Don't talk about it. Talk about the weather.
Threaten, threaten trails for a long, long time.
gentlemen, we are back and we are better than ever. You are tuned in and listening to TaylorTerraRadio.com, where you can catch us live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. If you missed any of the show today, if you'd like to catch any of our past episodes, if you'd like to go back and listen to Sherry Jacobus on Monday, that was an incredible interview. Any of our incredible interviews, whether it's been with Nancy Pelosi, boy, so many. Tara, it's been, this is our, I think, 61st show today, 62nd. And we've had so many great guests on. I mean, everybody from Tara Settmeyer to Sherry Jacobus to David Jolly to Nancy Pelosi to Senator Ron Wyden. I mean, we've had some great guests on.
Yeah, and it's only going to get better and better going into 2019, I believe, because we're just bigger and
absolutely
better. And we have a wonderful guest joining us this morning, and you know how much we've been in during the months leading up to the midterms. We did everything we could to get as many candidates on the show as we possibly could, especially the female candidates who were running. And now that we've seen the results of what happened, and we are looking ahead to 2020, one of the earliest people who have declared their intentions to run, please welcome to the show, Dr. Kat London.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to talk to you because my slogan is, when Democratic women run, stuff gets done. And I had to amend that, Dr. Kat, because I used to say, when women run, stuff gets done. But then we saw what happened with Susan Collins.
Yeah.
And how she basically sold out our entire gender by aligning, and she did. And I really see her as, you know, it's just like The Handmaid's Tale, right? It, like Aunt Lydia from The Handmaid's Tale is basically what I've cast her as, because she's complicit. And it is really disturbing to have a woman in that position talking out of both sides of her mouth.
It's
very disturbing
new
for me.
This isn't new. She has
not
played a moderate
so
in the media, but she is not a moderate. And I saw this coming, which is why I declared my race in July, because I saw this coming. I saw what she was going to do. She, to me, she turned totally with the tax vote last year. I had met with her ahead of the Trump care vote, the AHCA, and she listened. She was still, you know, at that point listening and understanding what was good for the country. And I don't know, something shifted after that, and the listening stopped. And I don't know if they have something on her, or she just doesn't care, or if there's something with her husband, because he does work for Russia. I honestly don't know. But something shifted. And when she turned around, like, are we really going to believe that when she held up that little piece of paper that she had promises on the tax vote, that are any of us going to believe that a 22-year veteran of Washington is that naive? Come on. Come on. You know, that's when I knew, no. And so I knew she was going to pull this, oh, I'm concerned. Yeah, are you going to do anything? Too bad you're not like a legislator and you could actually do something and write legislation. You know, come on. You know, like, do your job.
And it's one of those things where you don't do your job, then fine. We're going to get someone who will. And
right.
So, you know, literally, as soon as she stood up in front of everybody and made her speech, and then eventually said she was going to support the vote for Kavanaugh, immediately everyone was like, okay, so who's running against Susan Collins in 2020? And of course, Susan Rice was kind of like, oh, me. But I, you know, I don't know that she's actually going to follow through on that. You are going
right
to follow through.
Like I said, I way before the money was there, I had already declared. I declared in July. I was hoping that my declaring would actually pressure her to do the right thing. Unfortunately, it did not. But And mine is growing out of service, you know, in the same way that, you know, what I'm a primary care doc. I was in academic medicine before moving to rural Maine, the same thing that drove me to leave a salaried position and come up here and do this is what's driving me to do it. It's not that I want to be a career politician. It's that somebody needs to stand up and represent the people, you know, and actually do that. And she is the prime example, along with McConnell and the bunch of them, of why we need term limits. You know, if you didn't need a better example, she started out doing the right thing, and what happened? What happened to her? She went in saying she only wanted to do 2 terms, and maybe had she done that, she would have left with, you know, still having done the right thing. Something shifted.
I swear, seems to me that it happened to a lot of the GOP, that they were strong against Trump out of the gate during the campaign, and then even early on after the inauguration, they were still speaking very tough against him. They were firm in their stances. And then slowly but surely, every single one who had spoken out against him has been turned. And
Agreed.
I can only imagine it's Russian money. It's money. It always goes back to the money. Because
Agreed. Yeah.
They either have something scandalous on these people to hold them down, like a Lindsey Graham. Come on, the skeletons in Lindsey's closet. Let's not even. But with a Susan Collins, I think either something to the fact that her husband has those connections. There is something there with her. I think it's money, and not so much of a scandally misbehaving, romping with Russian hookers kind of a thing. More like, oh, you know, they've both accepted money, Russian money funneled through the NRA. So. Yeah, I think eventually you're going to find out, you know, there's 2 different kinds of Republicans, the ones who are in cahoots with Russia and the ones who have managed to escape that. But I don't know who they are. We don't know.
Right. And
so,
I think a lot of it is the plain old greed of like, here, we can use him to get our legislation passed. And, you know, since Citizens United, we've become an oligarchy and less of a republic, you know, democracy. And that's what we're seeing. And
absolutely. Let's just go back a little bit for the listeners who aren't as familiar with you. And your personal history, because they're like, who's this doctor who wants to run against Susan Collins? Because you're a doctor, that doesn't mean you're qualified to run. I'm just playing devil's advocate. If I don't know who you are and I've never heard of you before, just give us a little bio of your background and why you feel you're the right woman. I mean, we feel you're the right woman for the job, but let's make your case to those who are listening who may not be as familiar.
So I have spent my whole career doing healthcare policy. Let me just start with that. I graduated Yale Medical School in 1995 and have been very involved in patient advocacy work that whole time. So that means I go beat my head against the wall in state legislatures and federally. So I go down to D.C. and beat my head against the wall there too. And that meant, you know, and to do things like get access for different things, to make sure patients have access to things. And that meant, even though I didn't think the ACA was a perfect bill, it was the best bill we could get through that particular Congress. I thought its original iteration was superior to what eventually passed and what has been done to it since, but certainly helped to keep it going. I've also been a talking head, especially when I lived in New York and Boston, on all the major networks to talk about it and before it was the ACA, when it was just healthcare reform and why it was needed and why we still need, you know, further healthcare reform and some iteration of single payer. You know, and I've been a single payer fan, you know, since med school. So I've been involved in healthcare policy all along. I am on the front lines of the opioid epidemic. I am fervently pro-choice. Get out of my exam room. You're not a physician. You have no business legislating what goes on in my exam room. Go to medical school if you want to be a doctor. Just real simple. And so at first, you know, I sort of felt the same as you. I've never wanted to run for office. I was the policy person. I'll come and advise on things like that. But then as I saw what was going on, so many of the ills of our country are healthcare related. from delivery of care and how we pay for it, and who better to be involved in that than those of us who actually do this for a living. Now, the majority of the increase in cost has been administrative. Physician fees have not changed. If anything, they've gone down if you look over the past few decades. It's the layers of administrative nonsense that have raised the cost. And that is very shameful. Let's start with that.
It's true, and I happen to know this. My ex-husband is an emergency medicine physician who is now he's not practicing any longer, but he does have the directorship of three different emergency departments here in Washington State. And that's what he talks about when he's unable to hire anybody because of the administrative costs tying him up, not able to hire more qualified doctors. Here's a question that has befuddled me for a very long time, Dr. Ken, and I'm sure it befuddles a lot of people as well who are on the side of wanting accessible health care for all. Why can't we have a system like basically every other country, like Canada? Why do we fear socialized medicine in the United States of America, and why can't we do what Canada does?
We have a huge insurance lobby. You have CEOs
who are making
hundreds of millions of dollars a year who are trying to protect that. You have who are profiting off the backs of physicians and others. You have everybody makes money off of healthcare except doctors. you have systems that are in place to work against that, who will sit there and try to say how awful it is when we know better. You have you've got the health insurance lobby. And the health insurance lobby is protecting their CEOs and their other executives along with their stockholders. That's who they're beholden to. They don't give a rat's ass about patients. You know,
Dr. Kat, I think this goes back to Citizens United getting corporate money out of politics, term limits. Because let's be honest, I'm not going to sit here and rattle off any high-ranking Democratic names here, but there are some very high-ranking Democrats in Congress that take a whole lot of money from the healthcare industry. And
I'm sure there are.
They're absolutely, that's a huge problem.
One of the issues with the ACA when there was no public option, when that got taken out, and that was a big gimme to the insurance industry. And that was one of the things that destroyed it.
Yes. I think you would probably agree with me. You know, when that was, Obama was playing, Obama was playing a little give and take there with the Republicans. And, he gave a little bit, to get the ACA through. I think ultimately, I think if he had it to do over again, he would have just went straight, single-payer health care, which, I completely, support. I'm down here in South Texas, and I'm stuck with a governor down here that won't take any federal money, take anything. So even if when you're buying into the marketplace down here in Texas, say opposed to our neighbors over in Louisiana, where I have a lot of family, we're paying 3 to 4 times as much for our health care through the ACA than Louisiana is because they
you're preaching to the choir. We've had Governor LePage. He's the one who famously said that Narcan doesn't save lives.
Right. Yes.
Okay, so I'm paying currently $1,800 a month for me and my two healthy sons, and we each have a $5,500 deductible, down from the $6,200 that it was. Thanks. So I'm paying $1,800 a month for catastrophic care. It's crazy. I mean, the joke is I should run for office so I can afford health care. Doctor runs her for office so she can afford her health care. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
It's unreal what I just.
One of the reasons I'm running
until Saturday.
Open enrollment
is going on
until Saturday.
And it's not cheap. It's not. I'm looking at it. I am currently not insured, and I'm looking at the open enrollment. I will make it before the weekend, but it's not cheap.
It's why I do, I, like many physicians, I do offer direct primary care in my practice. So for patients like me who have this giant deductible, I do, and for my patients who are uninsured, direct primary care is like it's kind of like having a gym membership, but with your doctor. So for a small monthly fee, everything's included, and they get their meds at cost through a dispensary in my office. So most meds are like $5 a month. So some doctors do that only and don't take any insurance. I do what's called a hybrid practice. So I do take Medicare and Medicaid and some private insurances, and then I do that. And a lot of the doctors that choose to go direct primary care, it's because they're tired of dealing with the nonsense of insurance companies. And I don't blame them. I just can't not take Medicare and Medicaid right now. I just can't stomach that. Although they keep me, if CMS, if VEMA goes through with saying that we're going to pay you the same for a what we call level 2 and a level 4 visit, they're saying, oh, we're going to simplify things for you. Here, we're just going to pay you the same fee for when it's an easy patient and a complicated one.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. You're going to screw me, you mean? I don't think so.
Dr. Kat, Susan Collins came out yesterday, and she said she feels, quote, vindication as Kavanaugh sided with Planned Parenthood and sided with the liberal justices on SCOTUS. Not to take up the defunding Planned Parenthood cases from Louisiana and Kansas. Collins said, quote, I certainly do feel vindicated, Collins said, who reportedly supports abortion rights, told reporters. Collins, who decided to support Kavanaugh despite mounting allegations of sexual misconduct, provided the pivotal vote that landed the newly appointed justice on the bench and potentially swayed the balance of the court towards conservatives for a generation. That really wasn't reported on a whole lot. What's your take on that? I mean,
it was meaningless. It was meaningless. It's about defunding or defunding Planned Parenthood. It has kind of nothing to do with that, and they chose to not take it up. So her feeling vindicated is misguided. And that's nice. Good for her. It's meaningless and still has nothing to do with what we all saw, which is regardless of what happened or not 30 years ago, he showed that he doesn't have the temperament for somebody who belongs on the Supreme Court.
I would absolutely agree. We've had many conversations on Kavanaugh on that very topic, going through the confirmation.
As someone who went to boarding school during that same period, I know exactly what all those statements in his yearbook mean. So don't sit there and lie. Own it, and I might respect you. Sit there and lie, whatever. Yesterday was meaningless. That's all.
Right. I felt the same way. I knew it was. I wanted to throw that out there and get your take on it. You know, Collins and Murkowski used to be two Republican senators, you know, quote, moderate, that, you know, we could kind of count on. But as you said in the beginning of the interview, Collins has really gone the way of the right now. And I would be curious, as you stated, you know, why is she being pulled so far to the right when she tries to play herself off as a quote moderate? We all know she's not a moderate.
She plays one in the media.
I'm not a moderate, but I play one on TV.
You got it. That's exactly it.
Ridiculous. The hypocrisy that surrounds, I mean, we all know that there's hypocrisy in politics. I mean, I think that you're naive if you think otherwise. But the inability to separate someone's self from the actions of the party, you know, like if you're going to align with the GOP, you're going to have to take responsibility for everything the party does. You can't cherry pick. Right. So you can't say, I didn't do this, but I did this. If you're going to sell out your constituents for your own personal interests, you should not be in politics. Unfortunately, that seems to be what most of the GOP is. So,
right.
What do we do? I mean, obviously, besides trying to get women like you in positions of power, and obviously we're going to see a change when the new House is sworn in January. It'll be very interesting to see if what kind of Republican pushback we're going to get once the House starts trying to do stuff. So as we move forward into 2019, that's something that I'm going to be watching really closely, is to see what the Democrats are going to do with the new power that they have, and then what the reaction will be from sitting GOP senators. Are we going to be able to actually have bipartisanship? Are we ever going to be able to come back as a nation? These are all questions that I have. And then there's also the question that people put forward is, like, why don't we have a third party option, a fourth party, a fifth party option, so that you're not stuck between choosing between two people that maybe you're not in love with? And they
My sons and I have talked about, my younger son and I talked about wanting to start the Common Sense Party.
That sounds great to me. Common sense would be delightful to have in politics.
You know, there are some things I'm very progressive on, and some things I'm more moderate on, and some things that you might even consider me right-wing in my views on. And I align with Democrats because I have girl parts, and the only thing that the GOP seems to want to do is regulate that. Apparently, we can't regulate guns and bullets, but we can regulate, you know, my uterus. And I hate to tell them there's no jobs in there or anything else. and I'm over it.
There's no jobs in my uterus. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm over
it.
You know.
Make me laugh.
Sarah, are you okay?
I'm fine. I was just laughing.
I'm over it. And, right.
Like,
and
does the government think that they get to regulate what goes inside my body?
They don't. And they want small government. Oh, apparently so small that it fits in my uterus. But that's, and that's enough. You know, it's, I can't go there anymore. I can't.
It's disgusting, isn't it?
It is. It's horrific. And that those are the kinds of things that just turn me off so much that they'll never, ever, ever win me over. And it's so that makes me unapologetically walk away. And it's why Tiffany and, you know, who you know well, Tiffany Bond and I are good friends, and I understand why she ran as an independent, but I'm in running against Collins, I don't think that not having a party structure behind me would be a good option. And that doesn't mean that I'm always going to be on the party line, and I am very forthright where I am and where I'm not.
Indeed, you
so
are.
What I will promise to do is always tell you where I stand.
Yes. Dr. Kat, I was just, you know, scrolling through your timeline, and as you were just describing yourself there, you know, you can be moderate, you can be left, you can go right. you tweeted something. You said that somebody had, I guess, asked you about the Women's March. And you said
that's a big one.
And you said you left when they scheduled on Yom Kippur with BLM unapologetically. And could you kind of, and then you went on to kind of touch on Linda
Sarsour. Let me say it. I'm Jewish, and so
hey, me too.
Yeah. So the anti-Semitism. So I was involved in the first Women's March. I did go to D.C. And then as it kept going, Linda Sarsour was appearing at all these very anti-Semitic, you know, it was really, she was going, supporting the Palestinians in a light that I knew to be untrue. Like, as someone who's been to Israel a lot and knows a little bit more about what goes on there, you know, this is where, there's a balance about what's going on, and I'm not okay with what I'm seeing here. So when they decided to do the march with Black Lives Matter on Yom Kippur, and then they were unapologetic about that decision,
I was
like, I'm done. And I unenrolled from everything. I don't send me any more emails, got off of all the Facebook groups and everything else. I was disgusted, frankly. And in fact, a good friend of mine who I had worked on the war on women, she and I had a disagreement over it because she's a woman of color and she didn't understand. I'm like, this is Yom Kippur. This is our holiest day of the year. You know, this is not like something that you have to go look up the date of. It's everywhere. You know, so I was really, really offended. And she and I are still friends, by the way. But she really didn't, you know, she appreciated where I was coming from, but didn't appreciate the weight of those. And then over time, so I was really kind of relieved to see more of the stuff that's been coming out. My younger son had pointed out about Linda Sarsour, and so he was the one who kept showing me some of the things that were going on in the women's march and the leadership, and it made me take a look, and I didn't like what I was seeing, and I said, "You're right," and when that came across my Twitter feed, and I saw the article, I wasn't surprised. And I wasn't surprised that it went back as far in time as it did. And it was, you know, to see that their support Farrakhan was, you know, was upsetting. And unfortunately took away from what could have been a very unifying thing for women. And it didn't need to go down that route. It just didn't.
When I was watching all of that play out, you know, I'm the worst Jew in the world, though. I'm not practicing. I'm more like socially Jewish, but I'm still very proud of our heritage. It informs my humor, my life, all of that. We need coming together as women. That is where it should begin and end. And it should not matter the color of your skin, the way you worship, if you believe in a God. It has nothing
to
do with that. We are not being oppressed for that.
Right.
Right? We're being oppressed for having these bodies.
I'm not anymore. I was Orthodox at one time. And, so I've been to Israel before and after the Intifada broke out. And I remember going before when I could walk through any part of the old city with no problem. And then after when I couldn't, when I was warned, no, don't go down those streets. You can't. And I remember speaking with other women, and that we were like, the women are the ones who are going to fix us because we didn't have the issues. We got along.
I know.
And so to have that come down and to hear the things that were said and read about the things that were said was so disappointing to me, because it's not about that. And to have it go that way, that's evil.
It makes no sense.
It's why I say that to me, that's evil coming out. That's the face of evil coming out. And honestly, that's how I look at that, because that's not about anything but pure evil. That is using something else for your own end. And it's no longer about unity. And if it's not about unity and it's about splitting people, then that's what evil is.
Absolutely. And the question is, how do we get the narrative back to where it should be, which is women united together, period, end, without anything diluting it? Because
so
I don't
it's,
care
it,
what your
so you start
is.
Over. Yeah, you start over again, and you obviously need leadership. And so that's like the same thing with government. You know, like I wrote a piece that got printed about George W. Bush, and H.W. Bush, the first Bush, you know, in his passing. I didn't see politically eye to eye with him at all. And my father's also from the Greatest Generation. And my father and I don't see politically eye to eye at all. And we cannot talk politics. We will start fighting within about 5 minutes. It's ugly. Mm. However, we can agree on common problems and try to solve them. And that's what I miss, that we can come from politically different backgrounds, but we need to come together to solve common problems. And that's the politics I miss. And that's
Wouldn't
what I want to get
nice?
Back to.
Wouldn't it be nice? Can't we all just get along? But see, the thing that frustrates me so much is the outside, you know, the opposing view to the women's march, the right-wing view. That's what they want. They want us to be divided, right? They want us to be yelling at each other. They love the idea of women fighting each other. instead of being united. And that's what kills me in all of this, that we wanted to come together with a unifying message, and then somehow it all broke down, and our opponents are really enjoying that. They like it when we're disorganized or we're fighting each other, and it makes me insane. Because
it's the same thing
as
the Democratic Party. It's the same thing with the Democratic Party, where you have the progressives
exactly.
and the moderates.
Exactly, that's the illusion.
And
that's
the
illusion
issue.
I'm going to make next. Yeah,
it's the
it's
same
true.
Issue, and it's like you can't do that. We have to really get to what is our common goal. And that needs to be across everything, whether it's across the aisle or within ourselves. What is our common goal? What are we trying to achieve? And stop with what our differences are. As a country, all of us have a whole lot more in common than we do different. We're human beings. Strip away the skin, we all look the same.
Absolutely. But this was the plan that Daddy Vlad implemented from the outset, and this is what he wanted, right, is us to be divided, us to be angry with each other, ready to fight at all times, frustrated, exhausted, all of that, because a divided country is a weakened country, and that's why he was able to step in and take over the way he has.
Let me jump in, be more unified, fighting back. Yeah, but long before this, long before Trump came into office, we've had, this hyper-partisan political atmosphere hanging around D.C. for quite some time.
Yep.
And
it
didn't just start with Trump. This has been around for a while.
You have
the extreme left, the extreme right. You have some people floating around in the middle. But this extreme hyper-partisanship, this political atmosphere that roams around D.C., has been around a while. It just didn't come in with Trump. People need to stop saying that.
No, I agree with that. I think that it started to worsen under Obama. And I'm going to put that to racism.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That really the ugly side of America has come out, and we need to put it back away. Real simple.
Yeah.
Get over it. Get over it.
Well,
you know. The xenophobia and racism that I have really seen that has come out so disgusts me. And discourages me, and I have to say, and I have to remind myself that. And that's really what I'm about, that remember that as human beings there's so much more in common, that our DNA has very little difference between each other. And, 0.1% difference between each other, so that there's so much more in common. And get back to that. And how do we work together to solve the common problems? However you believe climate change happened, I do believe we contributed to it. But whether you do or not, we need to solve it. We need to fix it. We need to, and all these things that are happening, our infrastructure crumbling, how we deliver health care, our opiate crisis, all these things, how we get along with the rest of the world, all these are things that we need to solve. We can't put our heads in the sand.
And the first step is getting the people who still blindly believe everything Donald Trump says, getting them to understand that he's lying to them and that they have been conned by the ultimate con man. And they certainly don't want to believe that. It's not a great thing to believe that you trusted the wrong person, that you made the wrong choice.
Impeached, didn't he still have 30% who liked him?
It's crazy. How do you admit to yourself you were wrong? There's worse things.
No, there are stupid people.
Wrong.
No, there are just stupid people. You can't fix stupid.
Well, I call them the willfully obtuse because they would rather
continue
to eat
stupid.
When he feeds them than think for themselves. And if you're not going to think for yourself, then you are in a situation of your own making and you get what you deserve.
I think Trump is a symptom of a larger problem. And you have that on the left too. I mean, if we're talking about hyper-partisanship here, I mean, this goes on both sides here. And my daytime job is I'm a political consultant. So I mean, I've you know, I see this happening, and when we come to the realization, and when everybody does, that it's not just Trump, this didn't just start with Trump. Once we can get over that part, then maybe we can start working on some real solutions and getting money out of politics, getting corporate money out of politics.
100%.
Getting fossil fuel money out of politics, term limits. I mean, these sorts of things that dictates, what our legislators do. And, that's where we need to go. Dr. London, I wanted to thank you for joining us today, taking out so much of your day. For all of our listeners, where can they find you on social media? Where can they find your website and all that good stuff?
So the website is Dr. spelled out, Dr. Kat London for me.com. So DOCTOR. Cat, CAT, London, LONDON, FOR, ME.com. And that links to all the social media, but social media is my regular one is the verified one is Dr. Chaya, DRCHAYA, my Hebrew name. Dr. Cat for me, so DRCAT, the number for me. That you can get to, and there's a Facebook as well, Dr. Kat London for me. All of it's out there. And please, I'm going to be in, those who are listening from New York City, Monday night, the Dakota Bar on 72nd Street on the West Side at 8 o'clock. Come, buy a drink, say hi.
Oh, I wish I could be there. That's not that far from where my mother lives. I love another feisty.
My mom's 90th birthday. So
mazel.
We're going to celebrate. Yeah, right?
Mazel.
So we're celebrating mom's 90th and then going and gathering with a few people to say hi. And
that's fabulous. That's wonderful. It really
getting
is.
Things
Let
off
me
the
tell
ground.
You something. There's nothing like a bunch of New York Jews getting together, because I bet the jelly will be fabulous. The meal will be to die. Congratulations to you and your family. And I love another feisty Jewish woman on the other end of my microphone. So you are always welcome to come back and join us. Dr. Kat London, thank you so much for giving us so much of your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You have all
yes,
of our support.
You.
Go get them.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah, go,
have a good day.
Yeah, go get them.
Bye.
All right. You too. Thank you, Dr. Kathleen London. I'm telling you, Tara, Dr. Kathleen London falls right. She falls right in my wheelhouse as far as. I mean, really, and you know what I'm talking about as far as where my politics go, and
mm-hmm.
she falls right there in my wheelhouse. That's somebody I could absolutely, work for on a campaign and do it with all my heart and all my soul.
Absolutely.
I really
she's a
like
shining
her.
Example of
yes.
when Democratic women run, stuff gets done. I fully believe she would be a powerhouse in the Senate, and she would certainly do so much better for our country than Susan Collins will. So
yeah. I would suggest to all of our listeners out there, there's a lot. Oh my God. I mean, we just didn't have time, but there is so much good stuff out there about her, things she's written, things have been written about her, a lot of really good stuff. So I would encourage all of our listeners to go out there, Google Dr. Kathleen London. And, her interesting takes. I mean, yeah, she is exactly what she says she is. She can be left. She can be right. She can be in the middle. It's refreshing. That's what we need. That's what we need. We have to get rid of this hyperpartisanship, Tara. We have to, or we're never going to get anywhere. We're just going to be in the same boat, going. I mean, we're going to sail off the end of the earth.
I hear you. I saw something interesting on Facebook, and I wanted to get your take on it, actually, because one of the things that people are obviously starting to talk about is the presidential ticket for 2020 and who should run. And there was a poll. There's two things here. So there was a poll that they released on MSNBC yesterday. Who do you want to see running in 2020, the number one contender in this specific poll was Beto O'Rourke. Put a pin in that. The second thing I wanted to ask you about was the thing that I saw on Facebook yesterday where somebody somewhere had suggested a ticket where Joe Biden was the presidential person on the ticket, and VP Mitt Romney, a bipartisan presidential ticket with a Democrat and a Republican running together. So I'm asking you two things. I'm asking you, what do you think about people already putting their hopes behind Beto O'Rourke? And then the second thing, do we want to see a ticket like, I mean, I personally don't want to see a ticket with two white guys on it in 2020, but do we want to see a Republican and a Democrat sharing a ticket in 2020?
Well, I'll answer your first, I'll answer the Beto question real quickly. He's not going to run. And, you know, he's just not going to run. He might show up in Iowa. He hasn't been there yet. But he might show up there for a meet and greet or whatever, but he's not going to run. And he's not going to accept a VP slot. He's going to bide his time. He's not ready. He knows he's not ready. He's not a person, man, or if he was a man or woman, he's not suited for that VP role, and he's just not going to make a run. It's going to be a crowded field. As to your second with Romney and Biden, it's interesting. You know, I've heard that a little bit. I didn't know that it was being posted everywhere. I've heard just the kind of like backroom chatter about it. You know, I just don't know that. I think it kind of just goes to what you're saying there. I don't think the country's going to buy into two white men up there, you know.
No.
Not in 2020. It's got to be the best ticket. And I think Dr. London would agree with me on this. She's not with us any longer. But, there's a lot of interesting, you know, parallels to a Biden-Romney ticket. I mean, you're bridging. Look, Biden has always been pretty much a, you know, for one, you know, Biden is a cradle diehard Catholic. Biden is someone that is a strong, you know, a military person. Biden, you know, has a lot of very moderate views. Romney, obviously he's Mormon. He's always been kind of the moderate, tried to play himself off as a moderate. We'll see what he does in the Senate. I think that's kind of going to be a key there, Tara. What Romney does in the Senate, how strong he stands against Trump and Trumpism and any of that, you know, garbage that comes through, or any of that garbage the Senate tries to lay out there. We need to see what Romney's going to do in the Senate, I think, first. But, I mean, you know, it's not – you look, in this February, which is 2 months away, or less than 2 months away, a year from February, we'll have our first Democratic primary. So remember that. It's not that far away. I do like the idea of Biden. You know, I like the idea of a Biden-Harris ticket with Biden giving, at least laying it out there that he would maybe only serve one term. I mean, I think Biden would be a good buffer coming out of Trump. You don't want a flamethrower on the top of the ticket, not coming out of Trump. You don't. And if you're going to be running against him, let's just say I say he's going to be there running. You say no. But let's just say, for argument's sake, that he is there and he is running. You don't want flamethrower against flamethrower. That's not going to work, you know, and Trump's worn out his welcome in that area, I truly believe. And you know, his support is dwindling. So you don't need somebody to come up there and just be on the attack. Somebody like Biden, because Harris can be a flamethrower, and that's great, because you know, if she fits into that VP role perfectly, and she fits into that role to if Biden was only to serve one term, to take up the mantle and run for president you know, which she will ultimately do.
Yeah, but I think you and I have also discussed the optics of a white man and a black woman on the same ticket, where the black woman is second to the white man, and
yeah,
I don't like the optics
I think
of that.
But see, again, I think people are going to have to get over it. I mean, come on. I mean,
I'm just saying,
I know
the optics of it might
be
difficult.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, no, I get what you're saying, but, you know, we haven't had a, you know, I mean, let's, you know, we've never had a woman president. We've never had a woman vice president. We've only had, two women on presidential tickets. One was Geraldine Ferraro. The other one was Sarah Palin. So, you know, there's not a whole, I mean, you know, there's not any, I don't know.
I mean,
it's
time. It's definitely time. It's the right time.
Time.
So again, first we have to wait and see how the next year plays out as far as what happens with the current administration and how people take care of it.
And one thing that a lot of people look, and this is kind of, I don't know that a lot of people know this, but Senator Harris's father's from Jamaica, her mother is from India. So it's, you know, she's very diverse, and I think I think on a Biden ticket, I mean, you know, I don't know that for me in my mind, I know a lot of people, I mean, if you want a diverse ticket, I don't know where else you really, I don't know who else kind of fits together real well, because, you know, good old Uncle Joe up there, you know, kind of ushering in the next generation or the next president in Senator Kamala Harris.
Right,
you know,
but we have also heard the rumblings that Hillary will run, and if she does, everyone else will take a step back. And then the question is, if she does, she's going to have to choose a really excellent VP candidate. And Julian Castro is trending because he's begun an exploratory committee for his own 2020 run. And I would say, pardon me, Julian Castro is excellent, and we love him. And, you know, having a Texan, a Latino, a rising star in the Democratic Party absolutely makes sense. I don't know that he's presidential just yet, but in the VP slot, I think he would be amazing. So he and Hillary would make a wonderfully balanced ticket. And I think, and I also have said this on the show, if she maybe had chosen him in 2016, as I had hoped, she might have had a better go at it, because she would have had a more balanced ticket. So he is someone who has longevity in politics. We'll just have to wait and see what happens.
I've got a little this is a little inside info that I was in a conversation with some I think I might even mention this. I might have even talked about it on the show. I know I talked about it with some other friends of mine that are in political strategists and such. But, you know, Hillary has kind of come out and made this deal that she would absolutely Obama's, you know, you if you've out there in the listening audience, you've probably read that Obama's had a number of these individuals he spoke to, Beto, and, you know, he told Beto not to run, by the way. That's what has been said, that you shouldn't run now, that you should wait. No, I'm serious when I say this. Yeah, and that Obama and Hillary would both support a Biden ticket. Hillary would not run on the condition that one of her, I'm just quoting what was said to me, one of her gals was on the ticket alongside Biden. One of her gals, I'm quoting, would be Harris or Gillibrand. And what I've heard is Harris would be the VP and Gillibrand would be appointed, would take a Hillary. If it's Harris on the ticket with Biden, which would most likely be the likely scenario, then she would want assurance that Gillibrand would have a high ranking position on the cabinet. That's what I've heard.
Well, and that sounds good, too. And then, I mean, there's also minority leader coming up, like after the 2 years where Nancy Pelosi will be speaker, that'll also be something else in 2020 that you can look at, is, you know, the turnover of the power in the House. You know, who's going to be our speaker, who should be our minority leader, hopefully perhaps majority leader going into 2020. We'll see what happens in those elections. But there are a lot. We do actually, when people say that we don't have any strong contenders for 2020, they're not really paying attention and they're not really looking.
Oh, no, they're
and,
not.
So I think that what hopefully, and we'll probably are going to start hearing more serious names emerging once the new House is sworn in a few weeks, because we'll have a little bit more, you know, we'll have support. And again, you know, even though I've said this repeatedly, I don't want to see 16 contenders standing on a stage debating each other. I would love for there to be a cohesive ticket announced from the outset so that we can all rally our support behind them instead of, like we were talking about with Dr. Kat, instead of being divided, instead of fighting within our ranks, presenting a united front as early as possible so that we can say, this is our team. This is what we're doing. This is who we're supporting. We are unwavering. You will not defeat us. That would be fantastic to see. That's the kind of unity that we need to present in the party. And I would love to be able to see that. So I think if we can get that together sooner rather than later, so that it's not everybody throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks, but that we say somebody definitively emerges by mid-2019 or sooner and says, this is who our ticket is. That would be amazing to see. And I think that's maybe something we can start. That's a narrative we can maybe start, because the sooner we present a united front and the stronger that we appear to the opponents, the more scared they will be. So
yeah.
They're counting on us to be running around like the clown car that they actually are. And what we need to do is be the grown-ups in the room. That's what we need to do. So as we come to the end of the show and we wrap and we look towards – look towards Friday, and we think about what's going to happen with the remainder of this week, where we still have Flynn sentencing memo and Flynn sentencing and Manafort sentencing. And they've actually just announced that American Media Incorporated, you know, David Pecker's company, they have reached a deal with the Attorney General of the state of New York. So all kinds of, it's a non-prosecution agreement. They admitted to paying the Trump campaign $150,000, and that's not okay. So we're going to see a lot of movement there. And
Tara, let me throw this out there real quickly, food for thought. As we, I was going to get it in there on the 2020 possible presidential contenders on the Democratic side. Somebody that I like, you've heard me speak of many times, and somebody President Obama really likes, he had him up there and he talked to him for a long time, is Mitch Landrieu from Louisiana. A lot of people like him. And here is another possibility. You're talking about having this ticket with a Biden-Harris. There is also the possibility. Biden is somebody that, Landrieu is somebody that flies under the radar. Obama loves him. And I love him too. He's so passionate. I mean, he's just such a good man. You could possibly see a Harris-Landrieu ticket with Harris at the top of the ticket and Mitch Landrieu as her VP pick.
It sounds interesting.
I know people say, oh, well, Landrieu and Harris are not known names, blah, blah, blah. But I'm telling you, that would be a – I mean, cause you're kind of getting the flip side right there of what you're getting with Biden at the top and Harris there. You're getting Harris at the top, and you're getting Landrieu as somebody who's pretty soft-spoken, and he's very compassionate, and he really comes across that way. And
but again, so, you hit it at the beginning of that sentence when you said name recognition, and I think that's something that – I mean, he has time to grow his name recognition. But there is also another name being thrown about as a – potential presidential candidate, and it's somebody that I really, really like, and that's Jeff Merkley from the state of Oregon right here. A Merkley Harris ticket would be a very strong ticket, I think, also. So it removes the question, is he too old to serve, because Joe Biden is an older gentleman. Jeff Merkley has emerged, first of all, he really emerged as a very strong member of our Senate when he was fighting for the families at the border. He was one of the first senators to go down there and see it for himself, right?
Here's my argument on that, and I'm going to get here's my argument for that against that, and I'm going to get, you know, people are going to crush me for this, but with Merkley and Harris, you're going to have two really far lefties on the ticket, and we need a kind of centrist on the ticket, whether they be at the top or they be at the VP role. But we don't need you. No, I mean, Harris and Merkley are both progressives. I just don't see that.
I wouldn't
working.
Say that Merkley is as much of a progressive, and that's only because
I don't know about that.
Well, but also you have to look at his record in Oregon.
His
voting record.
No, I have.
Okay. I think the word progressive is becoming a dirty word for some reason. There's nothing wrong with progress. It means it's moving things forward. So, and I'm all about forward motion. I'm just saying, if Merkley is throwing his hat in the ring, a good balanced ticket for him would be someone like Kamala Harris, because he would need a woman on the ticket, and he absolutely should take on a woman of color and someone who has name recognition, who has strength, who has a following. That would be a good balance. Just saying. Would be. So there's a lot of could be, would be, should be. Again,
sure.
I think the number one thing we have to wait and see is if Hillary actually declares. If she actually declares, because that's what's buzzing, then we'll see who takes a step back and then who decides that they're going to challenge her.
Then we'll have a different
conversation.
From the conversations I've been privy to, I actually believe that from what I've been told, that if all this kind of comes together, if she can basically design have a say or play a large part in designing the ticket and the cabinet. I know that sounds, but I mean, it's Hillary Clinton. After all, she does know what she's doing, and I don't think she'll run. But you know, who knows? But we'll see.
Again, I mean, I don't know why she would want to put herself through that again. But she's also the most qualified person for the job. So the idea of having to go through another campaign like that is exhausting, although I don't know that it would be a campaign like we had, because we know so much more than we did in 2016. But I would gladly support Hillary Clinton again for president, put all of my energy behind her. I absolutely would, because I did already, and I've always been supportive of her, and I've always been a fan of hers. But I would also say that, you know, I think she's aware that her presence does
she's polarizing.
Certain things to certain
I mean,
people.
I love Hillary. I supported her 100%.
She knows that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's one of those, like, I think she knows she could, but maybe she shouldn't. And she's probably having a lot of discussions behind closed doors. Should I? Shouldn't I?
That's what I've heard. Yeah, I've heard that.
So,
I
think we're going to be able to have a more informed discussion once our new House is sworn in a few weeks, because then we're going to have a momentum that's going to start building and building even more strongly. And so, never a dull moment, that's for sure. I'll be very interested.
Oh, yeah. No, it's going
to
be exciting.
How the rest of just this week plays out. Let's try to get through this week and see what the rest of the week brings us, because every day this administration delivers another crisis for us to deal with. I'd be very interested to see, I haven't had a chance to look yet, but has King Baby tweeted about the Cohen sentencing yet? Let's take a look.
You know, I have not looked. And my relationship with Twitter. So.
He has not tweeted about the Cohen sentencing as of yet.
Real quickly, and then we got to get out of here. Real quickly, a lot of people, I had it in my notes here. I had a lot of people asking me about Twitter purging accounts again. Yes, they are. And they're purging the FBI. Listen, people, stop with these FBR parties and these FBR accounts that are old and have.
Dumb.
Yeah, I mean, please stop. That's when people are losing followers, and you know, I see a lot of people out there, and then a lot of people DM me. They know we talk a lot of kind of Twitter analytics or Twitter jargon here on TaylorTerrorRadio.com. But yeah, no, they're purging. No, and they're it's from these accounts that have farmed all these accounts through the election, past election cycle, and they used that election. They used you, by the way. They used the FBR. They used the resistance to build these accounts up with huge following numbers and park them right there. But that's a whole nother story for a whole nother day. Tara, all right, we got to get out of here.
All right, my
ladies
friend.
Ladies and gentlemen. All right, we're going to get out of here. Everyone have a great Wednesday. We'll see everybody on Friday for the Friday Political Wrap. Just me and Tara going in alone on Fridays. If you missed any of the show today, you can catch it right here on TaylorTerrorRadio.com in about 15 minutes for downloading or your listening pleasure or any of your favorite podcast listening platforms out there. Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play Music, or simply Google Taylor Terra Radio, and you'll find a plethora of listening platforms to either download or listen to the show on. If you'd like to follow me on Twitter, you can do so at JWadeTaylor. Follow Tara on Twitter at Tara Dublin Rocks, and you can follow the show account on Twitter at Taylor Terra Radio. Also, follow our coordinating producer, Steve Thomas, on Twitter at Kasich, the number 4, Indiana. Kasich 4, Indiana. All right, Tara, you have a great day.
You too, my friend.
All right, Christmas music, because it's Christmas time.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. A jingle bell swing, and jingle bells ring. Snowing and blowing, our bushels and fun. Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. A jingle bells chime in, jingle bell time. Dancing and prancing in Jingle Bell Square. In the frosty air, what a bright time. It's the right time to rock the night away. Jingle bell time is the swell time to go gliding in a one-horse sleigh. Giddy up, jingle horse, pick up your feet. A jingle around the clock. Mix and a mingle in the jingling beat. That's the jingle bell. Chiming, jingle bell time. Snowing and blowing, our bushels of fun. Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells chiming, jingle bell time. Dancing and prancing in Jingle Bell Square. In the frosty air, what a bright time. It's the right time to rock the night away. Jingle bell time. Go gliding in a one-horse sleigh. Giddy up, jingle horse, pick up your feet. Jingle low.